Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 145. Today my guest is number 99 in your program, but number one in your hearts, Aaron D. Fentel. How are you, sir?
Good. Good. I never was number 99, though. Right. I tried. Tried to get it once. Right on. Didn't happen.
Didn't happen, huh? Couldn't be that defensive end that you always wanted to be, huh?
Well, I was number 90 in a tight end. So
there you go. You were 90 and you were a tight end?
Yeah.
Did your coaches understand you were playing football? And that was should have been somewhere in the 80s.
Well, I always wanted a number in the 90s in little podunk Nebraska high school. We didn't have any numbers in the 90s.
Yeah.
Plus, in high school, I played O-line. So, have to be 50 through 79 anyway, and
right.
I had the opportunity to be number 90, and you can legally be a receiver, tight end, whatever,
right,
and be in the 90s. So, that's what I did.
Well, hey, there you go.
Plus, there was another, like, big white farm boy for Nebraska at the time,
yeah,
who was a tight end, and he was number 90, so that's where I got that idea. Even though I'm not a Nebraska fan, I was like, hey, there we go.
Right. Well, everybody's got to be special in their own way. Isn't that right, Aaron?
There you go.
There you go. So what's new and exciting, man? What's been going on?
Combines, my man.
Tis the season, right?
Tis the season.
Yeah.
Tis the season. Been moving quite a few combines.
Yeah.
On a weekly basis, and they're kind of all over the board, you know, some 780s. Late model S600s, and then 9770s. Pulled a couple more of them today, and just a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it's the combine market's really kind of perked up here a little bit. You know, you take a look around, what's going on? Commodity crisis. It is a crisis, I guess, if you take a look what's been going on in the market here of late. But everything's kind of went from 450 down to, I think today it's somewhere in the 14s somewhere. So it's it's kind of, we've lost. It's funny how those work, man. We'll lose 30 cents in a week or week and a half or whatever, and then we'll gain back 40, and then we'll lose 30, and we'll gain back 40. So it's kind of a back and forth thing, but. Well, that being said, combines have really perked their head up, and you know, I don't know that we would have had the kind of rush that we see right now, but I still feel like we would have sold some used combines, especially with the age that we're looking at. So you and I talk about this quite a bit, but what we're looking at as trade-ins go in, as trade-ins start to come in, what we're looking at is basically everyone's got the same trade, for lack of a really of a better scenario there, right? Everybody's got that 12, 13, 14 combine that's got 1,200 to 2,000 separator hours on it, right? And
right.
So everyone's kind of trading that same thing in, so the market's getting flooded right now. So take a look. When you look at the market right now and you look at that bunch of machines that are out there, what are some of your reservations and what are some of your high points, I guess, with that group of equipment?
Well, what I would say, I've had some action with 14s coming in, just an absolute slug of 13s.
Right.
13s are all over the place, which makes sense because when corn was $700 a bushel in 2012, they ordered their 13, and everybody still has that 13.
Right. That's exactly right.
So, what bright points are there with that market? If you get them cheap enough, you can still sell them pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The reservations are, can you get them cheap enough? So
right.
You can still sell them.
Yeah.
And for the most part, for the most part, they are, you know, guys that have those machines know that they're not going to set the world on fire with, you know, their trade value. Everybody's well aware of that. Listen to the Moving Iron podcast. But there's, you know, there's a lot of reality in the guys' minds that have those, and it's, you know, they just kind of are what they are without trying to ramble too much.
That's the one thing about those machines, is that they've hit that point in the market where all machines eventually hit this point, and there's probably two or three points when they start to kind of trickle down there, but there's that first level when everything kind of becomes worth what it's worth, and it's, we're there, I think, with those machines. If you look at auction value, if you look at retail value, you look at what dealers are doing, what jockeys are doing, there's no real surprises. I mean, obviously at auction you get some of those oddball stuff where something brings more outside of the, way outside of the realm, or brings less, way less than the realm, you know what I mean, than the average machine's bringing. But for the most part, when you look out there, you're seeing a pretty consistent flow of machines and a pretty consistent flow of prices. Fair statement?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
You know, so we're seeing that now. So I have my reservations, and we've talked about this a lot. I have my reservations about towards the end of the year and what that looks like. And as more and more of these machines start to fill the pipeline, whether they're combines or tractors or whatever they are, I mean, it's not just a combine problem. When you start looking at everyone's kind of trading the same thing in, it's a tractor problem too, you know. You're starting to see more of those, but that's a different kind of a problem, right? When you start looking at tractors, I mean, so you have... You can still sell a 5,000, a 6,000, a 7,000, 8,000 hour tractor, right? There's still buyers for that. There's still people saying, like, yeah, it's perfect what I'm looking for. What I've noticed with these combines is that now that they start looking at lease rates and those kind of things, there's some pretty cheap payments out there on some combines, especially if you're looking to either a maybe upgrade from a 50 or a 60 series up to even a 70 series up to that S series combine. Or even if you're just looking for that spare combine, there's some pretty cheap stuff out there. I mean, we're looking at payments of anywhere from $15,000 to $30,000 on some of these machines. And, you know, so it's, you start breaking the numbers down on that, you're looking at 50, you know, sub-50s up to 70, 80 bucks an hour, hell of a lot cheaper than you can rent a machine of similar thing from your local dealership. So I just think this is...
absolutely. And what, you know, everybody always has the biggest hurdle to get over with guys is, well, because you got your habitual renters, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the whole reason they rent that combine is so they don't have to pay the repair bill.
Right.
Because typically in a rental, you know, the dealer pays for the... It's part of the rental. But most combine rents are what, 250 plus?
Oh, yeah.
And for sure, 200 plus. Mm-hmm. Now, you have an 80.
You're talking dollars per hour, right?
You're 80 bucks an hour on your lease.
Right.
You have a hell of a lot of money to throw a couple chains and sprockets on it and an auger and some bearings and shit like that. It don't have to be a $30,000 through the shop every year type deal. It's a lease, you know.
Yeah.
It's a lease. It's not your, my dad bought this new in 46 and it's never leaving this farm type of deal. It's a lease. It's a machine, you know.
Yeah. It's cost per hour.
Dude, run it that way. That's the whole key with them leases. That's what I sold so many lease combines. Everybody's like, well, you know, the repair bills. And I'm like, as long as, if the auger's sharp, the auger's sharp.
Right.
You know, if you can shave with it, probably ought to replace it.
Probably.
But as long as it's not a absolute rolling wreck, you're good to go, man.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a, that is one big thing to overcome. But like you said, at 80 bucks an hour or 60 bucks an hour or whatever to run a combine, you can sit back and take a look at that and do the math. And it's way cheaper to lease a combine than it. But the other thing, too, is, it's not for sale while you're running it. You know what I mean? It's It's yours to use till your lease is up.
And that's, it's your baby for that 2, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever.
Yeah.
Plus, from a tax standpoint, that lease payment, although we're bragging about cheap lease payments, that lease payment, you know, immediately, or what is it, full, you can take that whole lease payment off, right? Isn't that how that works?
Yep. Something like that, yeah.
I'm not a freaking accountant.
Yeah.
But I know there's something involving that.
Yeah. Yeah, me either, but it's something along those lines. Yeah, you're right. All right. So, yeah. Disclaimer, check with your tax professional when coming to those things.
Aaron Fentel is not an accountant. Please do not listen to him on any accounting type issues.
Yeah. Yeah. So, when you look at the stuff that we see happening now with the market, it's starting to get hot. So, we're looking at all kinds of stuff. People are calling, wanting to update their equipment, wanting to take a look at the different options that are out there. And shockingly enough, the one machine that everybody just had this complete love affair with the first quarter of the year is really starting to dry up, and that's a 70 series combine. You know, I think it was that cheaper combine at the time. It was the one that people had there's obviously an affection for that machine. You go ask anybody about it, there's a big affection for that machine. But right now not that many people knocking down the door to get that 70 series combine like there was, you know, in March.
Dude, there are no people knocking down the door.
Yeah.
I got a list of 9, and I've only moved 3 now.
Yeah.
And it has taken everything I can to do that. It's almost infuriating.
Right.
You know, they went from, as long as it's, you know, under 2,500 SEP and, you know, under 80 grand, and, man, we'll just jump on that and we'll run 3 of them. And everybody has, you know, I think the rapture happened because everybody that was all about those combines is no longer on this earth.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's a wreck, man.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it, too.
I got nine of these combines. 8 of them are under 80, and only 6 are under 70. And it's just like, holy shit. Yeah. You know, it's a 22 separator hour combine for like 65,000. And you got to beg and plead, and it's insane.
Yeah. I think. But to the point of what the markets have done, we didn't really see this movement in the marketplace till here the last, you know, what, 2 months or whatever it was. We've really been seeing this thing take off and kind of start blazing a path down you know, an upward trend. Back in March and February, it was still pretty sure we're going to have $3 corn for the next foreseeable future, you know, and that 70 series made sense as that backup combine. And now, well, S-Series makes a little sense, or a 680 or something like that. Making sense.
Yeah, since that's happened, and everybody, I love my 9770, I love my 9770. Sure do have a lot of guys calling me to trade off their 9770.
Yeah, so there's
it's gone from, this is the greatest thing John Deere's ever made, to everybody that calls has a 9770 to trade.
Right. Yeah. So there's just a shift in buying cycle right now, and not to say that there's anything wrong with the 70 series combine, because I'm in that, they were a great combine camp, but they're also got 2,500 to 5,000 hours on them on their separator now. So now you're really starting to stretch the just the overall.
Not only that, but even at their newest, they're 8 years old.
Right. That's right. And so you go back from when that first year of production was, it's an 11-year-old combine. It's hard to believe that, but time flies when you're having fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I want to bounce something off you and kind of get you're a tractor geek, nerd, tire guy. So think about this for a minute. Let's say you have a customer out there, and he's debating, kind of kicking the idea around, do I do a because I was talking to a good friend of mine out in Illinois, and he was talking about some stuff some guys were doing, and it made sense. What's your thoughts on the RX or the quad track or whatever it is, taking that same horsepower four-wheel drive and putting 1250 tires on it instead of that, those the four-track system, and making it work that way? Basically, going to have the same footprint. You're going to have the same amount of tire on the ground for the most part. I mean, what's your thoughts on that? And do you think that's a viable option when looking at your high horsepower four-wheel drive market?
You mean like those LSWs?
Right, yeah, low sidewall
stuff. Yeah. Okay, from the tractor geek side of me, I'm not a fan of them. I know they are, you know, especially across Ag Twitter, they're all their age.
Right.
And I know you got 1250 there, but when you're, and you know, and I could see it on, 8,000s or Magnums,
right,
or, you know, small Steigers, say 9.470s on down. Once you get to 500 horse, man, I just can't help but think that you either need them tracks or 800. You know, because if you got two 800s, that's 1650. That's another, that's like taking that LSW and a 480 on the outside of it.
Right. Yeah.
And another thing that I guess I think of it a little bit in truck terms, okay?
All right.
With semis, you know, guys like them super singles, they don't run as hot. You know, you're not building up heat between the duals, which can cause a blowout, blah, 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 all that.
Right.
But there's no limping.
Right.
If you're flat, you're flat.
Right.
Now, I personally have had, once upon a time, a flat or a very, very low inner dual on a tractor. Actually, I did it on a pickup too, so it's apparently a habitual problem of mine. And didn't know it and ruined the inside tire. So there's that avenue too. From a production standpoint, I think I know the whole approach with those LSWs is the flotation side of it, flotation traction combination, okay? Mm-hmm. I know people that have them really, really like them. I haven't necessarily heard of anybody that's gone back to duals that had LSWs. I'm sure somebody out there has. Otherwise, there would be more and more and more and more and more. You know, if it was the complete perfect answer for everybody, I think there would be more of them out there.
Right.
Now, you know, footprint, traction, all that. They guys that have them seem to like them. They stay with them, so it must work. My personal opinion, I would rather have, you know, especially when we're talking 500 or bigger four-wheel drives, okay? I would rather have 800 duals than LSW.
Okay. And that's just because you feel like your traction is going to be better, or your flotation is going to be better, or why? Why do you feel like that?
Well, in theory, you know, you have way more footprint. You got as much damn footprint as humanly possible.
Right.
So you got that much more bite, that much more flotation, in theory. I would bet, though, with 800s, because they are so heavy. And typically with 800s on a 500 or bigger tractor, there's a hell of a lot of wheel weight thrown in there too.
Right.
And in that sense, you're probably eliminating any benefit of footprint. But everything you're doing that's hurting the footprint flotation avenue, you're boosting the traction avenue. Okay.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I don't know. I guess from a, I mean, I'm sure it comes down to dollars and cents for everybody. For me, I would always pick the 800 duals, but
gotcha.
That's my opinion, I guess.
That's how you roll.
step.
Okay, so.
And let's not forget, looks are very important.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, yeah.
And a 9570R looks a hell of a lot cooler with 800 Firestone dual on it than it does LSWs.
R1s, even.
Huh?
Get some R1s on there.
What'd you say?
Put some R1s on there. That way you got that full lug of look to it.
Oh, right.
Kind of have that kind of...
R1W, you mean.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because R1 is just regular old tractor tire.
Right, well, that's what I meant. Sorry, my bad.
Or you can put some R2s on there.
Right next to the D2s.
Right in chain action.
Right next to the D2s. You'd be good to go.
Champion spade grip.
All right, so this is one of those questions. I mean, this traction thing's a big deal, right? So there's so many different ways to equip tires and those kind of things. So now the next challenge you would have then, okay, do you go two track system or do you go quad track system? Now, pros and cons of both, right? Obviously, the two track system, you have ultimate footprint, right? You have whatever that is, 8 feet of track on the ground at all times. You've got your flotation issues and those kind of things are all, you know, you can debate back and forth on compaction and those kind of things, but what that looks like. But, you know, you obviously have the berming issue when you turn and those kind of things, and you can't really beat the auto track with a two-track system, right? You've got two sides kind of working, you don't have to worry about articulation or anything like that. So when you are... looking at those two systems, the RX quad track, four track system, or you have the classic two track system, what's your preference there?
Okay. You're gonna lose a lot of listeners on this because all the quad track boys are gonna lose their freaking minds. Okay.
All right. I think I'm willing to take that chance.
The two track system. It was invented first, and it was not green in color, as we all know, especially you know.
I know.
Okay.
Yes.
It worked. It worked fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the old 1920s Caterpillar, they were two tracks. Right. They weren't four tracks. Right. There was two tracks, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic traction efficiency, okay? All the way up to 86 when a two-track ag tractor comes out with rubber tracks,
mm-hmm.
into the 2000s, late 90s, 2000s, when they become more prevalent in the world. I think there are some disadvantages to two-track, but I am an absolute unshakable fan of two-track over four-track any day, okay?
Okay.
I have heard plenty from guys that have run both and say that the ride, and I'm talking, when I'm talking two-track versus four-track, I'm talking about both colors of four-track, okay?
Okay.
The ride in the four-track is not any better. The handling is different, not necessarily better. There's a little bit of a learning curve to running a two-track, whereas a four-track there is not.
Right.
The only benefit that I can honestly say a four-track has over a two-track is navigation in mud. Okay?
Okay.
If you drive into a swallow with that... Or a slough, not a swallow, a slough with that two-track,
uh-huh.
you better probably grab the cable because you probably might not get out.
Right.
And that's a very, very technical term, probably might not,
right.
Just so you know. You might want to write that down.
I got it written down.
Whereas with a four-track, you can navigate in mud very, very good. Usually, I have seen plenty of four-tracks buried.
Right.
And I've seen two tracks buried. Two track, you have far, far less maintenance costs. Your pulling ability is equal, I would say, flotation is probably honestly equal, not necessarily better. And,
you know, I think you kind of hinted that the T-Track has more flotation, which it has a hell of a lot, but by the time you take four of those tracks, you know, and width and length and all that, you still got a hell of a lot of square inches on the ground.
Right.
And ultimately, the price difference, say on green, with two versus four, holy shit, buddy.
Oh yeah, there is a price difference there, and that's the thing about whether it's case deer, even versatile with their Delta Track or whatever it is, there's a significant pricing jump in price between those two machines. So now that leads me to the next question I have. Let's assume that you have these articulated tractors or four-wheel drive frame tractors, equipped the same, 3-point PTO, big pump, so on and so forth. Everything about them is exactly the same except for their drive systems. So when you look at wheeled versus two-track versus quad track or four track or delta track or whatever you want to look at, which one of those machines do you feel like has bang for its buck, right? I'm not talking dollars and cents, I'm just talking bang for its buck, has the best resale value.
Best resale value?
Mm-hmm. As a percentage of new, or however you want to measure it, but not dollars and cents, but I mean as a, you know, I'm getting the most out of my money when I buy this machine.
Okay, if you're talking about a completely loaded up rig, high flow, you know, high flow leather LEDs, 3-point and PTO.
Refrigerator.
Yep, refrigerator. I knew that was going to come. I was going to point that out, that you did not mention that at first, if you didn't just bring it to the table, man. I think for what you are buying it at new to what you get back, I think two track is your best return.
Okay.
And I say this because there are pockets of this world where they absolutely love, adore, and worship 9RTs with 3-point.
Right.
There are a hell of a lot more areas in the world where they probably would rather order an 8R without 3-point because they just don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
But in personal experience, a 9RT, 3-point and PTO, is a very quick mover.
I would agree with that.
A 9R with 3-point and PTO isn't any better of a mover than a 9R with PTO.
Okay. I agree.
And a 9RX, I will tell you right now, we have one. And it is a wonderful, perfect tractor. And it's not a bad price. But, and it has everything. It's your perfect example of this. And yes, it has the refrigerator.
Awesome. Okay.
But it's a $400,000 used tractor.
Well, yeah.
You know, granted, it was 700 or whatever, but
right,
it is hard. It's hard to do. Just right. Like selling me 780s. You know, mm-hmm. I got 780s on Twitter that everybody's talking about and inquiring about and sold a couple. And that's everybody's thing on that. I was working on a guy on three of them, and he goes, "Ah, they're just too high." And I said, "What do you mean they're too high? Where did you find somebody that has cheaper 780s than that?" He goes, No. He goes, "I don't mean that." He goes, "They're a smoking deal for what they are, but they're still $295. You know,
yeah, yeah.
It's that scenario. And unfortunately, with what the new keeps doing, that's probably what scares me more than numbers of machine or any of that is just that freaking $400,000 used equipment, like WTS, man.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, that's the biggest fear. We've talked about the price of used equipment for, I mean, just the overall price of used equipment, not necessarily any particular model or anything like that, but just the price of used equipment in general is getting to the point now where it's the same guy that's going to buy a lot of this one-year-old, two-year-old stuff that actually qualifies for those kind of loans probably also could buy the new one too. You know what I mean? So it's
right. That's exactly right.
And that's, so now you start running some stuff. But now what I've started seeing as a trend line that I'm starting to kind of pay attention to and look at and kind of watch is the number of bigger operators that do these big deals, you know, and they've got, you know, $6 to $8, $10 million worth of equipment, those kind of things. How many of those guys are building a stable of older equipment that is their fallback equipment, or their, you know what, we picked up another quarter over here, I'll run this combine on that quarter, or, you know, my one of my newer combines is whatever, I'm going to go get this other combine and put it out. Or, you know what, storm's coming, get the combine out. You know, or you're going to throw an extra older tractor in and maybe be a tillage tractor, something like that. You're starting to see kind of more of that kind of take place where they're building those kind of stable of slightly used machines that aren't going to get the same number of hours that their big roll tractors are going to get, but they're not designed to do that. They're just to kind of fill a gap when they need to.
Well, and not, yeah, just like you said, there, you're going to have, you know, our base of operations is 15,000, and we bought that 2,000 over there, so we'll buy a 15 S680, and it'll hang out over there.
Right.
And that crew will do that patch while everybody else is over here,
yeah,
setting the world on fire with 790s at the home, at the base of operations.
Right. There's enough. They're growing fast enough every year, some of these guys are, that they're not just fast enough to be to kind of outpace what they have, but not really to the point where they need to go out and buy a brand new another brand new whatever it is that they're adding, right? Whether it be a four-wheel drive or whatever else. A lot of guys too, you're starting to see with the size of planters. You know, we all had this idea that with high-speed planter technology that there was going to be smaller, faster planters running around out there, but it that's not true. They've stayed the same size. They just want to go faster, right? And,
right.
And, you know, this year is one of those years that would have been great to have a, you know, a 250-row planter that you could pull at 10 miles an hour, just with the way things were, you know. I mean, it would just doing stuff like that. But what you're seeing now is not only the horsepower demand to run that planter, but you're also looking at the hydraulic demands to run not just planters, but these 60-foot air seeders and 650 bushel carts and stuff like that. I mean, that's where you start running into. It's not just horsepower anymore, but it's also the hydraulics, and that's getting to be a bigger deal as well.
Yep, that's exactly right.
So there's,
and with everything, okay, like let's look at, oh, real quick, I think we got off topic. Hmm. So if I was to rank your biggest return on fully loaded every option in the book on those 9,000,
mm-hmm.
9RT, 9OMER, 9RX.
Gotcha. Okay. And I'd agree with that.
From what you buy it new,
yeah,
back, I think that's where that falls.
And I think that's probably the same across the board, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, on the manufacturers that don't have a two-track system, I mean, obviously I feel like the wheel tractor market holds their value better than the two-track system or the four-track system does. I think that's pretty safe.
Yeah.
Safe bet. I'm sure some case guys will chime in here and tell me I'm full of shit, but from what I see out there, it feels that way.
Right.
So anyway, okay.
Well, it's not like we just started this business yesterday, so
that's true. So,
but yeah, that's why I said that. They're in the contract guys are probably gonna unleash on me, but it is what it is.
Right.
Now, back to the horsepower and hydraulics and all that, and take a look at high speed tillage, which is all the rage, right? Whether it's
sweeping the nation.
Yes, whether it's the Landau, the Deer, or Degelman Pro Till.
Right.
Okay, I've sold some of the Degelman Pro Tills to guys, and it takes 500 horsepower, unless you're perfectly flat ground and you're just going to tickle with it.
Right.
It takes 500 horsepower to pull a 30-footer.
Right.
That's the other thing, okay? So people are pulling things. It can't look at that PC equipment and go, well, hell, 350 horsepower. That'll pull that. It certainly will at 4 mile an hour.
Right.
You're supposed to pull at 10.
Right.
You know, yeah. just like the air seeders and shit. Well, we pulled a 60-foot air seeder for years. Yes, you did.
with a 270 bushel cart. Yep, you did. You pulled it for years. Now, and that was some old, you know, like an old flex coil hose heater or something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've got this other unit that's still 60 foot, but you're pulling it 8 mile an hour, and you have an 800 bushel cart, and you have, you're putting this and this and this and this and all this shit with it. So, you're getting more done, you're more efficient and all that, but you can't just look at, well, we've always pulled this size with this power, because the weight, the very weight of machines that we're pulling is at getting just more and more and more, which is good. I mean, they're using steel to do that, so that ain't hurting a thing. But the weight of the machines and the speed at which guys are pulling them now, that's the kicker.
Right.
You know, you can pull a 24-row planter. I know guys do it all the time, 8295, 8310.
Right.
That is not going to do an exact emerge 24-row.
No.
It might if you're one of those guys, and I've sold a couple of those exact emerge to guys, and I've said this before on the Moving Iron podcast, they don't want to go 10 mile an hour. They want to go 7 and have it be perfect.
Right.
You know, and there's guys like that out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know those same guys send me pictures of them planting at 8.5 or 9 mile an hour because, by God, we can.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, I just like the Corvette in case I need to go 100. I'm just going to go 60.
Right.
Yeah. You bet.
Yeah, I used to do the same thing with the riding lawnmower Grandpa had. It was, you know, keep the throttle at half and go out and mow like that. And then as soon as he went inside, I'd crank that sucker up. You know, I was going full tilt. He said, "That sure sounded an awful lot louder than when I drive." I was like, "I don't know what happened, Grandpa. I was just mowing, doing circles out there."
What are all these skips for? I don't blade my suck. I don't know.
I don't know. He sharpened the blades. I don't know. I'm just doing what you told me to.
Get you a Dixie chopper. Hang it down, son.
Get you that dual motor Dixie chopper and get some. Hell of a deal. Well, what else is on the mind of Aaron Fennell here?
Well, I don't know. Recently, the worldwide headquarters of Open Skies Farms. So.
That's right. How is the sheep business?
It's good. It's good. No, I take that back. It sucks. It's awful.
Yeah.
But you love it, so you do it.
That's what I always say.
It's a really stupid damn hobby to have, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'd say too.
Well, just working on some combine deals and then actually a couple tractor deals. Yeah, that's kind of the thing.
Outside of combines, what's the next real hot deal out there right now? You have some used planter demand out there? Anybody looking at doing something like that?
Yeah, you know, I've noticed that the customer base across the country, excuse me, I had to get a drink, I'm parched, is well aware of when early order is, and now is also the best time to start picking through used.
Right.
And I've had quite a few calls in the last couple weeks on guys looking for specific things, as in 24-row exact emerge, anything with the letters D and B in it.
Right.
And those are probably the tops. You know, we always get Texas to way southern South Dakota, those four states, is always a hotbed for 1720 planters, you know, still.
Yeah.
So there's a few calls on that, you know, guys wanting a used one, but wanting it as loaded up as we can get. A little bit of action on DR planters, which, for Easterners, that is a what am I trying to say? You're at the Stackfold with CCS and just a hell of a nice setup, quite honestly. So, you know, you get from, I would say, Highway 81, which becomes, what do they call that, Southern Kansas, 135?
Yep.
From there to the Continental Divide to the west, that DR is a super, super popular planter. And, you know, guys from that area calling, looking for those. So that, I'd say that's probably the DRs, the DBs, and big exact emerge. That's probably the top three that getting calls on.
So when you say DR, are you talking about like that that line of landowner equipment that you get, like the Roto Hog and whatnot?
No, not the DR trimmer mowers, if you will. It would be, the DR is Deer Orsman.
Oh, okay. I'm with you now.
Yeah, kind of like DB was Deer Bauer.
Right.
DR is Deer Orsman, and I think they call it a DR so they didn't have to call it a do.
A do, yeah.
I want one of those DOs.
Yeah, I one time I did have an L110 and a Roto Hog in a dream, but
and a dream, absolutely.
They never.
Speaking of that, DR, man, they make a lot of shit.
They do. They make all kinds of stuff for the rural landowner. They have a nice,
absolutely
nice. My favorite thing they have, though, bar none, favorite thing they got is the Power Road Grader thing they've got. You seen that? Where it's got an engine on it. You start it up and it's got a little, like, I don't know what you call them, but you run across the top. It's like a it's like a box blade, but it's got like a agitator on it, and it tails up the ground, kind of, sort of. And it,
yeah, and I don't quite understand. First of all, I know plenty that that is not going to have very, very good longevity, okay?
Right.
And I don't understand how it's going to be any better than a lot of other things that don't have a motor that you don't have to keep running.
Right. What I want to do is I want to take a bar of some sort and put like four of those little tiny Honda, like, cultivator tiller things on there, like the Mantis. Remember that?
Yeah.
And put those, but mount it backwards, right? So when you're pulling it across, it's fighting against the bar, and you should have one hell of a cultivator then.
You know what? That's a really damn good idea. That's like a, that'd be like a sweet organic deal.
Yeah. You just have to figure out how to synchronize them all. Not really have to synchronize them, but you have to figure out how to make all however many row units you have there all work together.
You have to figure out how the hell to keep track of the gas and eight of those running through the field. You know what you could do, though?
Huh.
You just okay, so it's PTO powered. You got a shaft off the tractor into a box, right?
Right.
A distribution box that has two out the, on each side. And then you go down the bar, there's another three-way gearbox and then a shaft to that tiller. Mm-hmm. And then another three-way gearbox and a shaft to the tiller, just like that. See, we just figured it out.
I think it's way cooler, though, if you just mount the actual Dylan. You got to pull start every row unit and get it running.
That would be awesome.
And then have a five-gallon bucket or gas tank, you know, atop with like eight different hoses running to it, and then you just let it nurse off that five-gallon bucket until you run out. Oh, got to slow down, boys. Number eight's down again. Go get some more fuel. Come on. And just bring out the nurse
and
tank.
And then on top of all of that, your favorite thing on earth.
What's that?
Do that with an automated tractor.
Absolutely. And then you're good to go, man. That would be the coolest thing in the world.
Why would you need an operator to be there and watch all that stuff happen?
Exactly. That would be the best thing known to man. But think about it. You got to start it up in the morning, get out there, start all eight individual row units up, or however many you got, and then just, you know, go get some. It's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect. The novelty of it by itself is worth having.
Oh, absolutely. it's a life experience is what it is.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. You
know,
just like Rogan or Holland Square Bales. It's life experience.
Right. And if you had
there other ways to do it, well, certainly, but you don't get the same life experience.
Exactly. So the cool thing, though, would be to have like a 25 or 30 horsepower tractor, you know, like the rural guy, and he's got his garden out there.
Mm-hmm.
Put the bar, make it be a pull type gimmick, right? Like you'd have to hook it to a 3-point, but get a 3-point small dolly to put it on. And then my friend, you're ready to roll.
Boy, that sounds like you're just adding parts to add parts.
Well, you're adding, it's the cool level now. You're going to be there really, you're going to really be able to get some stuff done.
Shit.
So anyway. Well, enough talk about future farm equipment at the rural lifestyle level. Let's wrap this sucker up. So any final thoughts, Aaron, before we shut it down?
Boy, I guess I don't know other than I'm just eating, sleeping, living, breathing combine. So if anybody's wanting a combine, you know, get a hold of me.
Okay.
Well, I'll do what I can to make it happen.
And if folks wanted to get a hold of you and talk about a combine or any other piece of farm equipment, how would they do that?
Do you see how I set that up for you?
That was so good. Smooth. It's like a soft little sweet pitch right down the middle. I knocked it out of the park.
Call me or text me on my cell, 308-760-1193, or on the Twitterverse at Aaron Centel. And there you go.
Right on. Well, good deal, man. Well, you can also check me out on Moving Iron LLC on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Although I am thinking about getting off the Facebook, I just can't do it anymore. It wears me out. So I can't handle it. So I'm gonna switch. I think about dropping it all together and just be on the Twitter and the Instagram. So I guess until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour. Out. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at Moving Iron Podcast at MovingIronPodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Dellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit MovingIronLLC.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and GlobalAgNetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving